run ayin chesem at beis at the second line from the bottom by the two dots where it says va'afilu. The Mishnah taught us that if there is a ditch that divides two courtyards with a depth of 10 tefachim and a width of 4 tefachim, then halachically the two courtyards are considered separate and distinct from one another. And they would not have the option of joining together in an erev. They would have to each make their own erevin. The Mishnah stated, even if the ditch was filled with straw, the halacha would remain the same, since our assumption is that this straw is being stored in there temporarily. Feed it to the animals, it's not mukseh, it's good for animal feed. So it might even be removed from there on Shabbos itself. Therefore, the ditch continues to divide the two chatzeros. However, if the ditch was filled with earth or pebbles, then these two courtyards would no longer be viewed as separate from one another. We now view where there was once a ditch as a level ground. The Mishnah apparently teaches that by default our assumption is that when a person fills a ditch with pebbles or dirt, he intends to leave that there permanently. Where it begins by questioning this, really, va'afilu b'stama, even where the person doesn't specifically declare that he intends to leave the dirt or the pebbles there forever. We still assume that that is his intention, but ayviatanan. We learn in the Mishnah Olos Natzel. Mishnah Olos states, Bayis Shemilu Tevin O Tsuroros Ubit Lo. Somebody filled the house that has a corpse in it up with straw or pebbles and declared that he is leaving the material there forever. Then the Mishnah rules Batel. The pebbles are deemed a permanent part of the house, and thus, if after adding the pebbles, there isn't even one tefach of space in the interior of the home between the pebbles and the roof, the home would cease to function as an ohel. It would not be deemed a halachic, a rooftop that blocks the tumah that emanates forth from the corpse. Rather, the tumah from the mace would break through the top of the home. If somebody passed over that, he would become tameh. The Gemara infers from the Mishnah's language, bit lo in, which implies where he specifically declared that I'm leaving these pebbles here forever, then they permanently become part of the house. But if lo bit lo lo, if he did not specifically say that I'm leaving the pebbles here forever, then they would not be deemed to be a part of the house and would not remove the house's status as an ohel. The house would still block that tumah that emanates from the mace. So it seems to contradict our Mishnah on this question. Mar suggests an answer. Rav Huna, Rav Huna answers, Man Tana Olos Rabbi Yosihi. Rav Huna suggests that who is the particular Tana of that mission Olos? It is the Tana Rabbi Yosi. Rashi explains that Rav Huna was vaguely aware of the fact that Rabbi Yosi and the Rabbanon debate the question we're discussing. So he surmised that, okay, Rabbi Yosi probably is the one who rules that the pebbles are not automatically nullified to the house. The person has to specifically declare his intention for that. Whereas our Mishnah follows the Rabbanon who dispute Rabbi Yosi, who say the opposite, that no, pebbles are something where we say, and by default, we assume that he intends to leave those there forever. The Gemara reacts to this suggestion. No, it's just the opposite. If you're going to bring Rabbi Yosi into the discussion, then he belongs on the opposite side of the issue. The Tanya for was taught in a Brice, Rabbi Yosi Omer. He said as follows, Tevin ve'ein osid lefanoso. If there was a house with a corpse in it, and somebody filled that with straw, the cases we happen to know, he will never require this straw again. There's circumstantial evidence of that. He didn't say he's leaving it there forever, but we know he has no reason to ever retrieve this straw. Halacha is harehu kestam ofer ubatel. The straw will have the same status as earth, even where the person doesn't specifically state that he's nullifying the earth there, where the halacha is that by default it is nullified. It's the same thing with this straw. If we know he's not going to remove it ever, it too is nullified. Okay, so clearly, Rabbi Yosi actually agrees with the exact position described in our Mishnah here in Erevin, that to offer a tzaros by default are nullified. Rabbi Yosi in the Braisa continues regarding offer of asid lefanoso. Let's say the opposite. He filled the house with earth. And it's a case where we happen to know he will need to remove that. Well, then, harehu kestam tevin velo batil. Such earth is judged as straw, where the person does not have any specific intention. That is, it's just like in that case, it doesn't halachically become part of the house because we assume he's going to remove it. Okay, so if we know he's going to remove this earth, then the same thing, it's not going to come batel to the house because of the fact that it's only there temporarily. So Ella Maravasi, Ravasi therefore modifies the approach and explains that Mantana Erevin, who is the Tana behind the Our Mishnah here in Erevin, that by default, even without any specific bittul on the part of the person placing the earth there, it's automatically assumed that it's left there permanently and is nullified Rabbi Yossi. Our Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, whereas the Mishnah there in Olos, which requires that the person specifically nullify the earth there, follows the Rabbanan who dispute Rabbi Yossi. The winner presents a different approach for how we could reconcile our Mishnah with the Mishnah there in Olos. Rafuna Bereder of Yeshua Omar Tuma a Shabbos Karamis. You're suggesting there's a contradiction between these rulings. One ruling, the ruling here, of course, in our Mishnah, which discusses the topic of halachically joining courtyards together with regards to the laws of Shabbos versus the Mishnah there in Olos, which is discussing the subject whether a house filled with earth would still be deemed an ohel which blocks Tuma from a mace. Rafuna Bereder of Yeshua argues, Hanech Isser Shabbos. Set aside the discussion of our Mishnah, which concerns Shabbos, that's a separate discussion. There's a confounding factor when it comes to, okay, for the question is, can this thing be moved on Shabbos? For Funa Breda Vishua points out that filu arnaki nami mevatel inish. On Shabbos, due to the laws of Muktzah, a person wouldn't even be allowed to move a pouch filled with money. Likewise, a person would not be allowed to move earth or pebbles. Those things are Muktzah. So indeed, whether he declares a bittul or not, our Mishnah states that if the ditch is filled up with pebbles or dirt, it will serve to join the courtyards together because of the fact that for the entire Shabbos, a person won't be able to move the dirt. It's Muktzah. So our Mishnah's ruling is particular to a case where it's Shabbos. This does not pose any kind of contradiction to the Mishnah there in Olos. Where it presents another approach, Ravashi Amar, Ravashi said, Baisa Charitz Karamis. You're asking a question by comparing the case there in Olos, which concerns where a house is filled up with dirt, to the case of our Mishnah, the ditch which is filled up with dirt. That's not a contradiction. For Bish, Lama Charitz, Lamitayme Ka'i. We understand in our Mishnah's case of a ditch why the automatic assumption is the dirt is left there permanently, because that's a normal thing for a person to do, to fill up a ditch. He decides, okay, I don't want this ditch anymore, so I'm going to fill it with dirt. Therefore, in that case, indeed, we say, okay, now it's level ground and the two courtyards are joined together. They now have to join in one Erev. Ela bayis lemitai mekai. Is it normal to fill up a whole house with dirt? Of course not. That's why in the case there in Olos, the dirt is not nullified to that house unless the person specifically declares that is his intention. Our Mishnah stated, let's say, Nasan alav nesa shiroch of dalet. Say a person placed a board across the ditch. The board has a width of 4 tvachim, and that would serve as a connector between the courtyards. It's like there's a Pesach there, and thus the courtyards would have the option of joining together in an Erev. And Rava makes a distinction here. Amar Rava, Rava said, Lo shanu ela shenasan lerachvo. The Mishnah's stipulation that the board only serves to connect the courtyards if it has a width of 4 tvachim only applies where the board is being placed across the width of the ditch. Essentially, it functions as a bridge between the courtyards. Halacha in that case is that the board will have to have a width of 4 tefachim in order for it to be labeled the Pesach that connects the courtyards. But if a person installs a board along the length of the ditch, and recall we are discussing a ditch which itself going across only has a width of 4 tefachim, person takes a board, which is at least a 4 tefachim long, and figures out a way for that to be supported along the length of the ditch. He has like supporting pegs or beams supporting that board. Afilu kol shehunami. Even if the board is of minimal width, it would serve to connect the two courtyards. Sharei miyato midalen. For behold, with even the slightest width, we would end up with a section that's 4 tefachim long, parallel to where the board is installed, where the ditch has been reduced to a width of less than 4 tefachim. It's clear from the Mishnah that only a ditch with at least 4 tefachim is able to separate the two domains. So this, as an alternative, would also work to connect the two courtyards. The Mishnah stated, V'chein shtei gezutros zu keneged zu. Likewise, if there are two balconies facing each other, According to Rashi, it means there's balconies jutting out from adjacent buildings. Other Rishonim say, no, they're across the street from one another. But in either case, the Mishnah rules that if a person places a 4 tefach wide board, abridging the two balconies, then the people of both domains would be able to join together in an Eruv. Rava makes a point regarding the Mishnah's teaching of Rava. Rava said, Hadi Amar, that which the Mishnah indicates, that Zu keneged Zu in, Zu shelo keneged Zu lo, that the board will only be effective in halachically bridging the two domains. If the two balconies in question were parallel to each other, Zu lemala mizu nami, and further the Mishnah implies that if they're not level, you know, height-wise, this wouldn't work. If you have a board, you know, going at a slant or at an angle, that would not be effective in attaching the two domains. But that's only if the discrepancy is at least a 3 tefachim. But otherwise, if it's a little off, they're not exactly opposite each other, it would still be fine, for we would argue gezutra akumahi. All right, after you add that board, it's a bit of a crooked balcony. But in the end, we would still judge it as one big balcony. The two Rishuyos would be halachically merged, and they would participate in one joint Eruv. We begin the next Mishnah. The Mishnah states, Masvein shebein shtei chatzeros giva asar tefachim. There's a haystack dividing two courtyards with a height of at least 10 tefachim. That is considered halachic partition, and thus ma'arvin shnayim ve'in ma'arvin echad. Two separate Eruvin would have to be made. They would not have the option of joining together in one single Eruv. The Mishnah states further that in such a case, Eilu Machilin Mikan, Ve'ilu Machilin Mikan. The people of each courtyard could have their animals eat from the haystack, each on their side. Even though theoretically the animals could eat so much that it reduces the partition to the point where it's no longer considered a partition, that would be the case if the animals ate and reduced the height of the haystack to below 10 tefachim across either the entire partition or for at least 10 amos. If that actually occurred, that of course would be a problem. For then, the two courtyards would be judged as one big domain, and the eruv that each set up for themselves would no longer be effective, and it would be prohibited for the people of either side to care even in their own courtyards. But that is a fairly remote possibility. It's not likely at all that the animals will eat such a large amount. Therefore, the animals may feed from either side from this haystack dividing the courtyards. The Mishnah states further, if nismayit hateven me'asar tefachim, if before Shabbos this haystack, a straw partition, was reduced to less than 10 tefachim, so again, meaning, let's say, the whole thing became less than 10 tefachim, or for at least 10 amos, which would breach the partition, well, then indeed, ma'arvin echad ve'in ma'arvin shnayim. The haystack would cease to function as a partition, and thus the two courtyards would be required to join together in an Erev if they wanted to be able to carry anywhere in their respective courtyards. It begins by qualifying the Mishnah's lenient ruling that it is permissible for each group on either side to have their animals eat from the haystack dividing the courtyards. Rav Huna said, "Ubilvad shelo yiten letoch kupas v'yachel." This is allowed provided that the owner doesn't go and himself take straw and put that in his container to then feed his animals. If we were to allow the people to start actually taking hay to feed their animals, then conceivably they would take so much that it would nullify the haystack status as a partition, and then of course that would create a problem in terms of it. Now they would not be allowed to carry. Maybe they don't realize that it now is under the threshold of a partition, and they would continue to carry, not realizing that in fact it's no longer permitted to carry in either courtyard. But apparently the only thing Rav Huna prohibits is for the owners to go and manually or physically with their hands take hay from the stack to feed their animals. The Gemara asks, "Lo'ukmi shari?" But you're saying we wouldn't have a problem with the owners bringing their animals, having them stand at the haystack to eat? And you're saying we're not concerned that in the course of that, the owner might forget and himself take from the straw and feed that to his animal? You're saying that's not a concern, but I veho am Rav Huna, am Rabbi Chanina. But in Masechta Shabbos, Rav Huna, the name of Rabbi Chanina, said, Halacha is ma'amid adam es pehem to agabe asavim b'Shabbos. Well, it's permitted for a person to have his animal stand over some grass to graze on Shabbos. That's not an issue. We're not concerned that in the course of that, the owner himself will go and start picking grass out of the ground to feed his animal, because we trust that a person will be aware of the biblical prohibition entailed in doing that. And people naturally are afraid to violate a biblical prohibition, so that's not a concern. However, ve'ein ma'amid adam es behemta al gabe mukza b'shabbos. It's prohibited for a person to have his animal stand over something that's mukza, to have his animal to eat from that on Shabbos. For the prohibition of mukza, we can't move certain things around on Shabbos, is of course merely rabbinic. So here there is a concern that in the course of having his animal stand over the mukza stuff to eat, the owner himself will handle that mukza material. So why shouldn't there be a similar concern here? That perhaps in the course of bringing his animal over to this haystack that divides the courtyards, the owner himself will start taking hay from that, which, as mentioned above, would be prohibited. Where answers that indeed, based on what Rav Huna and Masechta Shabbos stated, the person here also would not be allowed to actually bring his animal to the haystack to eat from that. Rather, the only thing our Mishnah would allow is the kaim la be'apa ve'azla v'achlis, to like indirectly cause the animal to go to the haystack, like to block its path from going elsewhere, till it of its own accord goes to the haystack where it could eat. We're asked another question on Rav Huna's teaching here. We're asked, "Velo yitin l'toch kupaso tevin?" Is this correct? As Rav Huna asserts here that the person would not be allowed to take from the haystack, put that in his container to feed his animal. I v'hatani, this appears contradicted by what we learn in the following brisa. Brisa says, if we have a bayis shebein shtei chatzeros, a house, you know, kind of shed, that is situated between two courtyards, and further, you have two adjunct houses on either side of this house in the center. One of those houses facing one courtyard, the other house on the other side of this house in the middle, facing the other courtyard. Umilohu tevin. And the middle shed was filled up with straw. Like the same as our Mishnah's case, a haystack with dimensions of a partition. Allah, as we would expect, is ma'arvin shnayim ve'in ma'arvin echad. Each courtyard has to make its own eruv. They can't join together in one eruv. For the straw in the middle shed serves to divide the courtyards. The Brisa then states, Allah is zen nosin letoch kupasa v'yachel v'zen nosin letoch kupasa v'yachel. So here's the problematic phrase. It says, each courtyard can physically, manually take the straw from that middle house and put it in his own kupa and bring that to feed his animal. So, of course, as will be noted below, this seems to directly contradict Rav Huna's claim that, no, you can't manually, with your hands, you take from the straw divider in the middle. Let's first see the rest of this brisa. The brisa states, if nismai tatevid mi yod tvachim, if the height of the straw was reduced to less than 10 tfachim, then of course the haystack will cease to function as a mechitza. And so now, since you have nothing dividing there, in that middle house, shnei masurim, so the whole area there, the middle house, the two houses at each side, will now be an area where it will be prohibited for either group to carry, because they both have jurisdiction in the whole complex, and they didn't make an eruv together. Therefore, neither party will be allowed to carry there. The Brisa continues, Ketzed hu'osa, what could be done in this situation to at least allow one of the courtyards to carry into that middle house? The Brisa advises, Noel es beso umivatel es rushuso. You have one of the courtyards, shut and lock the door of that middle house facing his courtyard. So he locks himself out of that middle house. In addition, he does the bittul. He formally declares that I relinquish my rights to the middle house, to the people on the other side, where later we'll discuss why both of these steps are necessary. By doing this, the Brisa rules, hu aser v'chaveiro mutter. The result will be that he, of course, will no longer be able to go to the middle house. He gave up his rights to that. But at least now that only the person on the other side has jurisdiction in the middle house, that person will now be allowed to carry there. So one guy could take one for the home team and let the other guy carry in the middle house. The Brisa states, V'chein ata omer, begov shel tevin shebein beis tchumei Shabbos. Just like we said regarding the case where the haystack, this, you know, pile of straw was intact above 10 tefachim, we said that the parties at either side would be able to take from that straw, put it in their container to feed to their animals. The same lenient ruling would apply if you had a case of a bunch of straw in a pit that was situated right on the border between two tchums of two different towns, meaning the 2,000 amah tchum limit ended for each of these towns right in the middle of this collection of straw. Rice is saying that the people of each town could have their animals eat from their side of the straw, and we're not concerned that they might mistakenly take from the other side of the straw, which is outside of their tchum. The Gemara now articulates its question from this Bryce on Rav Huna, where it says, Ketani mias, the Bryce at any rate states, regarding the case where you have the haystack dividing the two courtyards that's located in this middle house between the courtyards, they can even manually take straw from there to feed to their animals, as opposed to what Rav Huna was saying, that no, they themselves can't take from the hay. Our answer is Amri. The answer that the distinction here is as follows. Bayis, in that case there of the Braisa, where the haystack is in a house, kivin de ikka tikra, since there's the ceiling, which could be used as a point of reference, should the haystack be substantially reduced, like to already less than 10 tefachim, that will be noticed. You can clearly see that, oh, look, there's more space between the top of the haystack and the ceiling. Therefore, if that should actually occur, that they took so much hay that now the height of the whole thing is less than 10 tefachim, people will realize, oh, we now cannot carry, because this haystack in the middle is no longer a machitza, whereas hacha lo minkar le milsa. Here in our Mishnah, the haystack is not indoors, it's outdoors. So there's no point of reference for people to notice, hey, the height of the haystack got lower. That could very well escape their notice, and that could result in people mistakenly violating the prohibition of carrying their courtyards. If it gets lower than 10, and people don't realize that and continue to carry, they will be committing a violation. Thus, we're more stringent in the case of our Mishnah, where further studies the teaching of the Braisa. So again, the Braisa said that if Nismait HaTevin Me'asar Tzvachim Shnei Nasurin, if the haystack in this middle shed between the courtyards, if its height is reduced to below 10 Tzvachim, then the courtyards will no longer be allowed to carry there. For now that there's nothing dividing, now they both have equal jurisdiction there, and they didn't make an erev together, of course, therefore they would not be allowed to carry. Gemara points out that the Braisa clearly implies ha-asara shari. But as long as the haystack does have a height of 10 tefachim, each courtyard is allowed to carry between their courtyard and this middle shed. Even if the Braisa implies the ceiling of this shed between the courtyards is far higher than the top of this haystack of, let's say, just 10 tefachim, where point such, Mamina, we may deduce then, Mechitza she'in magios latikra shaman mechitzos, that even temporary partition as this, which doesn't reach the ceiling, is still deemed a halachic partition. There was a big fight about this issue back on Ayin Beis. Does this mean that our Braisa is weighing in on this controversy? The Gemara says, not necessarily. I'm Rabbaye. Rabbaye suggests that actually, Hacha b'Baye shlosha osra chosra mashra skinan v'tevin asara. The Baisa, we could say, specifically refers to the distance between the floor and the ceiling of this middle house is just under 13 tefachim, and the haystack is 10 tefachim tall, which means that the top of the haystack is within the range of lavud to the ceiling. It's less than 3 tefachim, so it's within lavud, which means that the halach allows us to ignore that gap. It's considered negligible. You could look at it as if the gap is filled. And so according to this, halachically, the haystack partition of the Braisa does reach the ceiling, so you can't infer anything about that controversial topic where it doesn't reach the ceiling from this Braisa. Represents another possible response. Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua Amar suggests, Afilu teme bayis asara, to rank the Amid Beis, v'tevin shivu mashu. We could also suggest that this shed in the middle is all of just a 10 tefachim tall, and the haystack is 7 tefachim and a little bit tall, which Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua suggests would bring us to the same point that Abaye was making, namely the chopachos mishlosha kalav adami. But at the end, okay, we have a gap of less than 3 between the top of the haystack and the ceiling. So halachically, we can look at that as if it's filled in. So in the end, we have halachic mechitzos of a full 10 tfachim connected right up to the ceiling. A case where everybody agrees that would be considered a valid partition. The Gemara points out, Bishlam ale Abaye, Hainu diktani me'asara. Abaye's reading fits very well with the Bryce's language, which was that, okay, let's say the height of the haystack diminished from 10 tfachim. That's perfect. Yeah, Abaye is saying that starting out, the haystack was 10, and the ceiling was 13 minus a little bit. Ela l'Ravuna b'rei d'Rav Yeshua mai me'asara. How do we read the Bryce's language according to the approach of Ravuna b'rei d'Rav Yeshua? He's suggesting that the haystack was all of just 7 tfachim in a little bit. But seemingly it's not what the Bryce says. The Bryce says that before it got diminished, which is the case we're discussing, it was a full 10 tfachim. The Gemara answers for Ravuna b'rei d'Rav Yeshua that we could say that by this language, the Bryce really means that they took from the haystack to the point that it was diminished mitoras asara, from a partition that had the halachic status a partition of 10 tfachim. That is, that although physically like the haystack itself was actually just 7 and a little bit, but since that was within 3 of the ceiling, which is at a height of 10, halachically it's as if we have a mechitza of 10. So you can say that's what the Braisa means. It used to be considered 10, if then they took from the haystack, then that of course would cause that to cease to function as a partition. So again, the Braisa states that if the haystack was reduced, and now it doesn't have the status of a partition, shnehen asurin. Both courtyards would not be allowed to carry into that middle house, because now they both have jurisdiction there, and they didn't make an erev together. The Gemara points out that Mishnah seems to describe a situation in which this happened on Shabbos itself, which means that essentially, upon the diminishment of the haystack, a new person moved in to the other side. You know, the people of the court of this side, so to speak, moved into the other side now that there's no partition there, and the same in the other direction. The Bryce apparently rules that on account of these newcomers who have, in effect, moved in, they also have jurisdiction on even this other side of the middle house that introduces a prohibition for everybody. Now nobody's allowed to carry there. So the Gemara suggests, Shema Minam, when we deduce from the Bryce then that the Yorin HaBayin V'Shabbos HaSurin, even where a new resident moves in to the domain of question on Shabbos itself, it upsets the Erev and causes a prohibition for everybody. The Gemara responds, no, you can't prove that from this Braisa, for Dilma de Imat me'esmol. Perhaps the Braisa specifically refers to where the haystack was reduced to below 10 before Shabbos started. And of course, you can make no such inference. Maybe the Braisa would say, if it only got reduced on Shabbos, that wouldn't be a problem. For once, everything was okay, it was a permitted status coming into Shabbos, that will not be impacted just because somebody decided to move in on Shabbos. Rather, the permit locks in for the entire Shabbos. Perhaps that's the way it really works in that kind of situation. The Bryce then stated, Ketzeru, oh, so what could be done here? We're getting the haystack, now it's less than 10. So at this point, nobody's allowed to carry in the middle house. What could we do to at least permit one party to carry in the middle house? The Bryce says, you know, one courtyard could take one for the home team, and remove himself. How does he do that? He does two things. He would lock himself out of the middle house, plus he would declare the bittul and say, relinquish my rights to the middle house. The Gemara wonders, Tarti, are both of these steps necessary? Why not just one or the other? The Gemara concedes, yeah, achikamar. That's what the Bryce really means. That, oh, Noel is beso, oh, mevatel is reshuso, to solve the problem, at least to allow the other party to carry in the middle house, this one may either lock himself out or declare the bittul that he relinquishes his rights to that shed in the middle. Either of those methods would permit the people on the other side to carry in the middle house. Or if you want, you could say, lo lam tarti. In fact, the Bryce means that both of these steps are necessary. The reason that we don't allow person on this side to just declare the bittul is the concern that Kivin de Dashbe, since his habit has been to utilize that middle house, Asilitotuli, he might forget and carry in the middle house when in fact he has renounced his right to the middle house. So as a precautionary measure, he should also lock himself out. the result of a person on one side taking these steps will be that hu aser, that person will not have access to the middle house, v'chaveiro mutter, the friend on the other side will be allowed to carry into there. The Gemara wonders, why did the Brayso need to add this clause, pshita? Obviously, that's the result. If he's mevatel rishos and even locks himself out, the Gemara answers, lo, tzricha, the hader idach batale l'chavrei. The Brayso's point is that even if the friend on the other side attempts to give the rights of the middle house back to the other one, the person who did the bittul first will remain prohibited from using, carrying it to the middle house. And thus the Brisa comes to teach us the ein mevatlin v'chozun mevatlin, that there's no backseas, you can't toss the bittul back to the original giver of those rights to the common area, an issue that was discussed on some meches amid beis. The Brisa is weighing in on that and saying that you can't throw the bittul back. The Brisa stated further, v'chein ata omer begov shel tevin shebein shnei tchumei Shabbos. The same lenient ruling would apply in the case of a pit filled with straw that's situated right on the border between the two tchums of the towns on opposite sides. There's again, the tchum boundary for each town ends right down the center, right down the middle of this pit of straw. The halacha is, the Brisa states, that people of each town could have their animals eat from their side of the straw that's within their tchum. Just like in this case of the straw in the house in the middle, the people from either side can eat from their side. Where one does pshita, seemingly this is obvious, so why would I think there should be any difference between the halacha here when it comes to the two adjacent courtyards and the halacha where it concerns the people on opposite sides of the tchum? When you know, seemingly either case entails just a rabbinic prohibition. So, of course, if it's not an issue when it comes to the rabbinic question of Eruvi Chatzeres, why would I think it should be an issue for the rabbinic issue of Eruvi Tchumen? The Gemara answers, Lo, Tzricha le Rebbe Akiva, the Amr Tchumen, the Araisa. The Araisa is saying that this lenient ruling with regards to the Tchumen case is true even according to the opinion of Rebbe Akiva, who holds that, in fact, the Halach of Tchumen comes from the Torah itself. It's a biblical halacha. And thus, the same you might have argued that the people from these towns cannot eat from this shra, even on their side, ligzer, for their banan should make a decree or dilmas ilichlufi, lest the people also take straw from the other side, which would be a biblical violation for the straw on that other side is outside of their respective tchumen. Kamash Malan, the Brisa comes to teach us that the Rabbanan made no such decree. Next mission discusses how a shitav is made in a mavoi. So it's very similar to the concept of making an erev in a courtyard, among your houses in a courtyard, just more on the macro level. We zoom out, and now we're talking about multiple courtyards surrounding a common street, a mavoi, that the people walk out into that mavoi, and from there they go out to the Rishus HaRav and beyond. The mavoi itself is technically a Rishus HaYachid, but the Rabbanan said, we don't allow the people of the courtyards to carry into the mavoi unless they merge together through Shitufei Mevos. They have to establish a halachic partnership together, then we could view all the courtyards as one big residence, and then all the people will be allowed to carry into the mavoi. The way the merger is done is with food. We talk about a shitav of a mavoi, we usually talk about using wine. So if they wanted to, all of the people of the mavoi could physically contribute some wine or put that in a big barrel and place that in one of the courtyards, and that certainly could serve as the shitav. But that is certainly a cumbersome way of doing it. The Mishnah offers a more convenient option. The Mishnah states, Ketzad Mishtatvim B'mavoi, what would be a way to establish the Shitav to merge the Mavoi together, to allow the people of the Mavoi to carry there on Shabbos? They can do as follows. One of the members of the Mavoi, maybe Meniach Es HaChavis, can take, let's say, from his own wine, his own stock, take a barrel of his wine, or whatever food, V'yomer, and declare, Harezu L'chol B'nei Mavoi, behold, the food in this barrel belongs to all of the residents of this mavoi, that they each have a portion in it. Then umizake lahen, he has to have a physical act of acquisition performed to effect this. He himself can't do it because he's standing on his premises, so it wouldn't mean anything for him to go and pick up the barrel of food to symbolize this. Rather, he must use a person who is independent of himself, a person who is not completely considered under his financial jurisdiction, who would then just be like an extension of himself, so that would still not accomplish anything. So for example, Yidei Beno Ubito HaGedolim, he could use one of his children, as long as we're talking about an adult, a son or daughter. But as an adult, that other person is considered separate and distinct legally from this benefactor. Or Valyidei Avdo V'Shifchas V'Ivrim, if he has a Jewish servant. That Jewish servant is a financially independent person, certainly not considered the property of the homeowner, and so such a servant as well would have his or own hand of acquisition to accomplish this. Or Valyidei Ishto, may also have his wife perform the act of acquisition. And whichever person he chooses, the idea is that that person would lift the barrel of food, and this would symbolize that the food is being transferred to the collective ownership of all of the members of the Mavoi. The Mishnah states, Aval eino mezake, lo al yidei beno ubito haketanim, he can't do the kinyan through a minor son or daughter, velo al yidei avdo v'shifchoso hakenanim, nor through a kenani, slave or slave woman, mipnei sheyadim ki yado. Because halachically, the hand of any of these individuals is like his own hand. For example, if his minor slave or minor child picks the lost object up, that's automatically acquired for the father. So being that this person is merely a halachic extension of him, as far as kinyanim go, it would not accomplish anything to have one of these people attempt the kinyan for the other people of the mavoi. Where it begins, Amar Rav Yehuda said, Chavis shel shitufei mevos tzorach lehagbia min hakarka tefach. To achieve the required kinyan of transferring the ownership of the food to the other people of the Mavoi, the person performing the acquisition act must lift up the barrel of food at least one tefach from the ground. Number Rav has said, Hani tarti mili sabi de pumpadisam rinu. The following two halachas were taught by the elders, the sages of Pumpadisa, which is a reference to Rav Yehuda and the other sages of his yeshiva. Chadaha, one of the teachings that Rav collects here from him, is the one we just mentioned, teaching that if we're doing a kinyan for the shitzif of the mavai, the food must be lifted at least a tevach off the ground. Yidach, the other teaching from the Sabi, the Pumbedisa from Rav Yehuda, and the other company in his yeshiva, was as follows. Sam Mekadesh, that a person reciting Kiddush, fulfilling the mitzvah to declare the holiness of Shabbos or Yom Tov over a cup of wine. The halacha is, im tam lo lugma v'yatza. If he drinks at least a cheekful of the wine, which is between 1.5 and 2.5 ounces, then he fulfills the obligation, vimlav, lo yatza, but otherwise he has not fulfilled the obligation of Kiddush, to have at least that melo lugmav of the wine. And Amrav Chaviva, Rav Chaviva added, ha nami sabi de pumpedisa minu. The sabi de pumpedisa also taught the following, the Amrav Yudam Rishmuel, Rav Yudam Rishmuel taught, the halach is osin medura l'chaya b'Shabbos. We can start a bonfire on Shabbos to provide warmth for a woman who just gave birth. For such a woman is automatically considered in a state of sakana. Thus, we can violate a malach on Shabbos to ensure that this woman who gave birth is warm, to remove a potentially mortal threat to her health. Now, Savar Mina, the Chum heard this teaching, they initially assumed that l'chaya in, that this teaching is specific to a woman who's just given birth, but the regular sick person, even a person who is, you know, dangerously ill, there's no like automatic dispensation of warming up the room for that kind of dangerously ill person. Of course, if the doctor says it's dangerous for him, if we don't warm the room, that would be different. But this sort of automatic dispensation, the Rabbanan assumed, wouldn't apply to a standard chola, even a dangerously ill person. Further, the assumption was that bimosa geshamim in, but bimosa chamalo, that even in the case of a woman who has just given birth, the dispensation only applies if it's in the winter, it's cold out. But during the summer, they assumed this wouldn't apply because presumably then there's no danger. However, it's marvus stated on Rav Chia Barav and Amar Shmuel, taught the following halacha, hiki is dam v'nitzdanein. If somebody just bloodlet a common medical procedure then, and he starts feeling chills, he's cold, the halach is osin lo medura b'Shabbos, We make a bonfire for him, even on Shabbos, ve'afilu b'tikufas tamos. Even if it's in the tamos season, right in the middle of the summer, it's very hot out, we would still light a fire to make sure the person is warm. So we see that, in fact, the dispensation applies to even these situations. The word continues, Omra Meymar. Meymar added, ha nami sabi de pumpedisa amrenu. The following was also taught by the sabi de pumpedisa de Itmar. It was stated, Ezuhi asher astam. In what case would there be a presumption that a tree was made into an object of idolatry, even if we didn't actually witness people worshipping the tree in question? Amarav Rav said, a sign of that would be, kol shem esharse uvdi gelulim shomrenosa. If the idolatrous priest guard the tree in question, continuing to pay, ve'ein tomin miperse, and refuse to eat any of its fruits, that would be a telltale sign that it's in fact an Asherah tree. It was made into an object of idol worship. Ushmuel Amar. Shmuel said, Kegon de Amri. Another sign would be that if these clergy were heard saying, Hani Tamri Leshucha de Bei Nitzrafe, the dates of this tree should be set aside for the beer that will be served for the idol Nitzrafe, the Shasule Biyom Chagam, which they typically would drink on the idolatrous holiday for that idol. A member continues, Unruly Sabi the Pumbedisa. So here's where the Sabi the Pumbedisa came in. They said to me, Hilchasa Kavasi de Shmuel, the halach is in accordance with Shmuel's opinion that the situation he described would be the sign that the tree in question was made into an object of idol worship.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.